This is Storytime, produced by Mary Washington College in connection with this radio station. Hello, boys and girls. It's me, Peter Moonbeam, back again this week to take you on another trip to Storyland. How are all of you this week? Good. I'm glad to hear it. We haven't very much time this week for going to Never Never Land to visit a woman named Mary Poppins. But first we'll stop off at the home of a girl named Sally, and she will take us from her home on to visit Mary Poppins. All right, everybody, have you got your stars? That's right. Now climb on them. Everybody on? Good. Now close your eyes real tight. Not everybody has them closed. That's better. Now wish. Go on, wish real hard. Are you thinking about what a sky looks when it's filled with stars? Good. Whee, and away we go. Come on, boys and girls, follow me.
Hello, boys and girls. Sometimes in England, when families are very big, there is a governess to take care of the children. Today's story is about the Banks family, who have a most unusual governess named Mary Poppins. So let's see what happens when Michael and Jane Banks and the twins go out for a stroll with Mary Poppins in the park. "And don't forget to buy me an evening paper," said Mrs. Banks, as she handed Jane 2 pennies and kissed her goodbye. Michael looked at his mother reproachfully. "Is that all you're going to give us?" he asked. "What will happen if we meet the ice cream man?" "Well," said Mrs. Banks reluctantly, "here's another 6 pence. But I do think you children get too many treats. I didn't have ices every day when I was a little girl." Michael looked at her curiously. He could not believe she'd ever been a little girl. "Mrs. George Banks in short skirts and her hair tied up with ribbons? Impossible!" "I suppose," he said rather smugly, "you didn't deserve them." And he tucked the 6 pence carefully into the pocket of his sailor suit. "That's 4 pence for the ice cream," said Jane, "and we'll buy a lot of fun with the rest." "Out of my way, miss, if you please," said a haughty voice behind her. As neat and trim as a fashion plate, Mary Poppins came down the steps with Annabel. She dumped her into the perambulator and pushed it past the children. "Now, quick march into the park," she snapped, "and no meandering." Down the path struggled Jane and Michael, with John and Barbara at their heels. The sun spread over Cherry Tree Lane like a bright, enormous umbrella. Thrushes and blackbirds sang in the tree. Down at the corner, Admiral Boom was busily mowing his lawn. From the distance came sounds of a martial music. The band was playing at the end of the park. Along the walk went the flowery sunshades, and beneath them sauntered gossiping ladies, exchanging the latest news. The park keeper, in his summer suit, blue with a red stripe on the sleeve, was keeping an eye on everyone as he tramped across the lawns. "Observe the rules. Keep off the grass. All litter to be placed in baskets," he shouted. Jane gazed at the sunny, dreamy scene, and Michael put his ear to the trunk of an oak. "I believe I can hear it going," he cried. "It makes a soft, creeping sound." "You'll be creeping in a minute, right back home, unless you hurry," Mary Poppins warned them. "No rubbish allowed in the park," shouted the keeper as he swept along the lime walk. "Rubbish yourself," Mary Poppins retorted briskly with a haughty toss of her head. "This way, please," she commanded presently as she swung the pram to the right. And they knew then where they were going, for the little path that turned out of lime walk led away toward the lake. There, beyond the tunnels of shade, lay the shining patch of water. It sparkled and danced in its net of sunlight, and the children felt their hearts beat faster as they ran through the shadows towards it. I'll make a boat and sail it to Africa, shouted Michael, forgetting his crossness. And I'll go fishing, cried Jane, as she galloped past him. Laughing and whooping and waving their hats, they came to the shining water. All round the lake stood the dusty green benches, and the ducks went quacking along the edge, greedily looking for crusts. At the far end of the water stood the battered marble statue of a boy and a dolphin. Dazzling white and bright it shone between the lake and the sky. There was a small chip out of the boy's nose and a line like a black thread round his ankle. One of his fingers on the left hand was broken off at the joint, and all of his toes were cracked. There he stood, on his high pedestal, with his arms flung lightly around the neck of the dolphin. His head, with its ruffle of marble curls, was bent toward the water. He gazed down at it thoughtfully with wide marble eyes. The name, Nellius, was carved in faded gilt letters at the base of the pedestal. "Oh, how bright he is today," breathed Jane, blinking her eyes at the shining marble. And it was at that moment that she saw the elderly gentleman. He was sitting at the foot of the statue, reading a book with the aid of a magnifying glass. His bald head was sheltered from the sun by a knotted silk handkerchief, and lying on the bench beside him was a big black top hat. The children stared at the curious figure with fascinated eyes. "That's Mary Poppins' favorite seat. Oh, she will be cross," exclaimed Michael. "Indeed, and when was I ever cross?" her voice inquired behind them. Oh, that remark quite shocked him. "Why, you're often cross, Mary Poppins," Michael said, "at least 50 times a day." "And never," she said with an angry snap. "I have the patience of a boa constrictor, and I merely speak my mind." She flounced away and sat down on a bench exactly opposite the statue. Then she glared across the lake at the gentleman. It was a look that might have killed anybody else, but the elderly gentleman was quite unaffected. He went on poring over his book and took no notice of anyone. Mary Poppins, with an infuriated sniff, took her mending bag from the perambulator and began to darn the socks. The children scattered round the sparkling water. "Here's my boat," shrieked Michael, snatching a bit of colored paper from the litter basket, and the twins beside him were happily paddling. Michael steered his ship through a terrible storm, and Mary Poppins sat primly on her bench and rocked the perambulator with one foot. Her silver needle flashed in the sunlight. The park was quiet and dreamy and still. Bang! The elderly gentleman closed his book, and the sound shattered the silence. "Oh, I say," protested a shrill, sweet voice. "You might have let me finish." Jane and Michael looked up in surprise. They stared, they blinked, and they stared again, for there on the grass before them stood the little marble statue. The marble dolphin was clasped in his arms, and the pedestal was quite empty. The elderly gentleman opened his mouth, and then he shut it, and then he opened it again. "Did you say something?" he said at last. And his eyebrows went up to the top of his head. "Yes, of course I did," the boy replied. "I was reading over your shoulder there," he pointed toward the empty pedestal, "and you closed the book too quickly. I wanted to finish the elephant story and see how he got his trunk." "Oh, I beg your pardon," said the elderly gentleman. "I had no idea of such a thing. I always stop reading it for, you see. I want to go home and have my tea." He rose and folded the handkerchief and picked up the black top hat. "Well, now that you've finished," the boy said calmly, "you can give the book to me." The elderly gentleman drew back, clutching the book to his breast. "Oh, I could not do that, I'm afraid," he said. "You see, I've only just bought it. I wanted to read it when I was young, but the grown-ups always got it first. And now that I've got a copy of my own, I really feel I must keep it." He eyed the statue uneasily, as though he feared that at any moment it might snatch the book away. "Oh, I could tell you about the elephants, child," Jane murmured shyly to the boy. He wheeled around with the fish in his arms. "Oh, Jane, would you really?" he cried in surprise. His marble face gleamed with pleasure. "And I'll tell you Yellow Dog Dingo," said Michael, "and the butterfly that stamped." "No," said the elderly gentleman suddenly. "Here I am with a suit of clothes and a hat, and he's quite naked. I'll give him the book." "I suppose," he said with a gloomy sigh, "I was never meant to have it anyway." He gave the book a last long look and thrust it at the marble boy and then turned away quickly. But the dolphin wriggled and caught his eye, and he turned to the boy again. By the way, he said curiously, I wonder if you could tell me how you caught that porpoise. What did you use, a line or a net? Oh, neither, said the boy with a smile. He was given to me when I was born. Oh, I see. The elderly gentleman nodded, though he still looked rather puzzled. Well, I must be going along. Good day. He lifted the black top hat politely and hurried off down the path. But what is your name? And how can you read? Said Michael, very astonished. My name is Nellius, the boy said, laughing, and I read with my eyes, of course. But you're only a statue, Jane protested, and statues don't usually walk and talk. However did you get down? I jumped, replied Nellius, smiling again as he tossed his marble curls. I was so disappointed not to finish that story that something happened to my feet. First they twitched, and then they jumped, and the next thing I knew I was down on the grass. He curled his little marble toes and stamped on the earth with his marble feet. Oh, lucky, lucky human beings, to be able to do this every day. I've watched you so often, Jane and Michael, and wished I could come and play with you. And now at last my wish has come, and oh, tell me you're glad to see me. He touched their cheeks with his marble fingers and crowed with joy as he danced around them. Then, before they could utter a word of welcome, he sped like a hare to the edge of the water and dabbled his fingers in the water. So this is what water feels like, he cried, so deep and so blue and as light as air. He leaned over the sparkling lake, and the dolphin gave a flick of its tail and slipped from his arms with a splash. Catch him! He'll sink! Cried Michael quickly. But the dolphin did nothing of the kind. It swam round the lake and threshed the water. It dived and caught its tail in its mouth and leapt in the air and dived again. The performance was just like a turn in the circus, and it sprang dripping into the arms of its master. The children could not help clapping. Was it good? Asked Nellius enviously, and the dolphin grinned and nodded. Good, cried a well-known voice behind them. I call it extremely naughty. Mary Poppins was standing at the edge of the lake, and her eyes were as bright as darning needles. Nellius sprang to his feet with a little cry and hung his head before her. He looked very young and small and shy as he waited for her to speak. Who said you might get down, may I ask? Her voice had its usual look of fury. He shook his head guiltily. No one, he mumbled. My feet came down by themselves, Mary Poppins. Then they'd better jump up again, spit spot. You've no right to be off your pedestal. He tilted back his marble head, and the sunlight glanced off his chipped nose. Oh, I can't I stay down, Mary Poppins, he pleaded. Do let me stay for a little while and play with Jane and Michael. You don't know how lonely it is up there, with only the birds to talk to. The earnest marble eyes entreated her. Please, Mary Poppins, he whispered softly as he clasped his marble hands. She gazed down thoughtfully for a moment, as though she were making up her mind. Then her eyes softened, a little smile skipped over her mouth and crinkled at the edge of her cheek. Well, just for this afternoon, she said, this one time, Nellius, never again. Oh, never, I promise, Mary Poppins. He gave her an impish grin. Hi, ting-a-ling! Look where you're going, the ice cream man gave a warning cry suddenly. He was wheeling his barrow along by the lake. The printed notice on the front of it said, Stop me and buy one. What wonderful weather. Oh, stop, 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 cried the children wildly as they ran toward the barrow. Chocolate, said Michael. Lemon, said Jane, and the fat little twins put up their hands and gladly took whatever was given to them. And what about you, said the ice cream man, as Nellius came and stood shyly beside him. I don't know what to choose, said Nellius. I never had one before. What? Never had an ice? What's the matter, weak stomach? A boy your size should know all about ices. Here, the ice cream man fished into his barrow and brought out a raspberry bar. Take this and see how you like it. Nellius broke the bar with his marble fingers. He popped one half into the dolphin's mouth and began to lick the other. Delicious, he said. Oh, much better than seaweed. Seaweed? I should think so. What's seaweed got to do with it? But talking of seaweed, that's a very nice cod you have there. The ice cream man waved his hand at the dolphin. If you took it to the fishmonger, he'd give you a very fancy price for it. The dolphin gave its tail a flick, and its face looked very indignant. Oh, I don't want to sell him, said Nellius quickly. He isn't just a fish. He's a friend. A fishy kind of friend, said the man. Why doesn't he tell you to put on your clothes? You'll catch your death running around stark naked. Well, no offense meant. Ting-a-ling, ting-a-ling. He rode away, whistling and ringing his bell. Cornelius glanced at the children out of the corner of his eye, and the three burst into peals of laughter. Oh, dear, cried Cornelius, gasping for breath. I think he believes I'm human. Shall I run and tell him he's made a mistake, that I haven't worn clothes for 2,000 years and never caught a sniffle? He sprang to his feet and seized Jane's hand. Show me the way to the bookstall, he said, and he drew her away through the spreading sunlight over the grassy lawns. Behind them, Mary Poppins lifted the twins into the perambulator and hurried along with Michael. Lightly across the grass ran Jane and the marble boy. His curls flew out on the wind with hers, and her hot hand held on his marble cheeks. With her soft and living fingers, the marble hand grew warmer. This way, she cried, as she tugged at his arm and drew him into the line walk. At the end of it, by the far gate, stood the gaily painted bookstall. A bright sign nailed above it said, Mr. Folly, books, papers, magazines. You want them? I've got them. A frill of colored magazines hung round the bookstall, and as the children raced up, Mr. Folly popped his head through a gap in the frill. He had a round, quiet, lazy face that looked as though nothing in the world could disturb it. Well, if it isn't Jane Banks and a friend, he remarked mildly. I think I can guess what you've come for. Not tonight, interrupted Mary Poppins. We're late as it is. Now best foot forward, and home we go, and I'll thank you not to dawdle. The sun was swiftly moving westward as she trundled the pram down the lime walk. The band at the end of the park was silent. The flowery sunshades had all gone home, and the trees stood still and straight in the shadows. The park keeper was nowhere to be seen. Jane and Michael walked on either side of Cornelius, linked their hands through his marble arms. A silence was over the human children and over the marble child between them. I love you, Cornelius, said Jane softly. I wish you could stay with us always. I love you, too, he answered, smiling, but I must go back, I promised. Is it time? He whispered, glancing up at Mary Poppins. She nodded quietly. Then, bending, she took him in her arms and kissed his marble brow. For a moment, Cornelius clung to her as though he would never let go. Then he broke away, smothering a sob. Goodbye, Jane and Michael. Don't forget me. He pressed his chilly cheek to theirs. And before they could even say a word, he darted off among the shadows and was running toward his pedestal. Up scrambled Cornelius, over the ledge, dragging the dolphin after him. His marble body blazed white and bright in the fading shaft of sunlight. Then, with a gesture, half gay and half sad, he put up a little marble hand and waved them all farewell. As they waved back, he seemed to tremble, but that may have been the tears in his eyes. They watched him draw the dolphin to him, so close that its marble melted into his. Then he smoothed his curls with a marble hand, and bent his head, and was still. Now, home again, jiggity-jog! Mary Poppins raised a beckoning finger, and the children followed without a word. The half-crown lay in Michael's palm, burning and bright and solid, and as cold as the marble hand of Cornelius was the book beneath Jane's arm. And as they went, they thought of the child who had given them those gifts. The marble boy who for one short hour had danced and played in the park. They thought of him standing alone on his pedestal, with his arm flung lovingly around his dolphin, forever gone, forever silent, forever still, and the sweet light gone from his face. Darkness would come down upon him, and the stars in the night would wrap him round. Proud and lonely he would stand there, looking down upon the waters of the little lake, dreaming of the great sea and his home so far away. Well, boys and girls, that's the sort of magic things that can happen when children have a governess like Mary Poppins. I see Peter Moonbeam beckoning in the distance, so off you go, and don't forget about Cornelius and Mary Poppins next time you take a walk in the park.
That was lots of fun, Sally. We thank you very much for telling us this story. Well, it's time for us to say goodbye, and time for all these boys and girls to be going back to their own homes. All right, boys and girls, climb back on your stars, close your eyes, and away we go! Well, here we are back in America. I hope you had fun on our trip and that you enjoyed the stories. I hope you will be here at your radio next week at this same time so that you can journey with us on our next storytime trip. I think next week will be especially fun. Until then, be good, have fun, take care of your stars, and good night. Reader for tonight's program was Sally Blyke. The engineer was Jewel West and Quincy Carter. The selection for this evening was The Marble Boy by Pamela Travers from the book Anthology of Children's Literature, compiled by Edna Johnson, Carrie E. Scott, Evelyn R. Sickles, and published by Houghton Mifflin Company, Boston. Storytime is produced by the Mike Club Student Radio Organization at Mary Washington College in cooperation with this station and was tape-recorded in advance at the College Radio Center. Your producer for tonight's Storytime was Quincy Carter.
It's filled with gold and silver tinsel ropes. They're hanging from the ceiling, and they're all over the floor. Just look at all the spinning wheels.
Oh, yes, it is beautiful. Oh, please, be careful where you step.
Jingle, I'm sorry, but I still don't know why the pine forest was so important.
Well, open your eyes and look. See? The elves are spinning the pine needles into tinsel ropes.
Oh, yes, they are. Jingles, come close to me a minute. Why does that elf over there at the great big spinning wheel have so many more pine needles to spin than the others? Was he a bad elf?
Oh, no. Oh, don't you know who that is?
No, who?
It's Rumpelstiltskin.
But of course, he can spin straw into gold, can't he?
Well, yes, he can. He's more famous for that. But during Christmas, he always helps Santa out. He spins twice as fast as any of the others. But, Kathy, it's almost sundown. We better hurry back to meet Willie so that you can fly home before night.
Oh, yes, we must. We have to get back in time to meet Willie. Goodbye, everybody. Oh, and goodbye, Rumpelstiltskin.
Who told her my name? How did she know my name? Nobody knows my name.
Jingles and Kathy climbed on the magic sleigh, and away they went toward the very center of the North Pole village, whizzing by each busy factory where Santa's many helpers were busy putting the finishing touches on thousands and thousands of toys. As they raced on, Kathy saw the hands on the big, big clock in the tower of the main factory. It was nearly time for her to meet Willie, the magic horse, so that she would be back in time for Santa's visit to her own house.
Jingles! Jingles! Do you see what time it is? I have to leave!
But the sleigh whizzed right on, towards a large open space in the center of the town, a tremendous clearing, very much like a landing field for an airplane, surrounded by some of the biggest factory buildings that Kathy had seen on her visit to the North Pole. They were very long, with rows and rows of tiny windows on each side, and very wide doors facing the airfield.
Jingles! Didn't you hear me? We must go to meet the magic horse.
Of course I heard you, but we simply have to stop here. Whoa! Whoa!
But what is this place?
It's the most important part of Santa Land, silly. This is where all the toys are given their final testing and then are loaded on the sleighs for Santa to deliver.
You mean he has more than one sleigh?
Of course he does. There's one for each country. In each of these warehouses, the elves are testing and loading the toys for a different country.
Jingles and Kathy went into the big building marked United States of America. On every side were toys, trains and jack-in-the-boxes, dolls and cowboy guns, rocking horses and trucks and boats and airplanes.
All making noise, they were tested.
Down at the end of the long room was a tremendous sleigh painted red and gold, and one after the other, the toys were being checked against a long list, tagged and loaded aboard.
To America, he will already have been to England and France and Holland and ever so many countries.
Gee, I never knew there were so many toys.
Every one of these big warehouses is full of toys and more coming from the factories. There are so many boys and girls. And now we really must find Willie, the magic horse.
Jingles and Kathy went outside, and just as they started to climb into the sleigh, someone spoke to Kathy.
Well, 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 and who are you, little girl?